gentlemen, welcome you all to Drive Through HR, the number one internet daily radio show for the HR professionals. And today we have an amazing guest joining with us, first time on the show. So a warm welcome to Thomas Lawson. Hey, Thomas, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Nisha. Very, very nice to be here.
Well, honored to have you here with us today. Tom, if you can kick off, can you talk a little bit about yourself and talk a little bit about what you do so that our audience, if there is anyone out there who doesn't know of you, they can know more about you.
Wonderful. Well, I'm a 35-year practicing human resources management professional. I run the HR function for my company for the 35 years that I've been in the employment screening business. I also act as a consultant for human resources directors and manager-level people with regard to policy formation and development with respect to their employment screening and vetting programs for their candidates. Commensurate with that, 35 years ago, I started a company called AppScreen, and that's APSCREEN. We basically came up with the idea that we could assist aerospace companies with relieving them from the employment screening function and outsourcing what was at the time something that was very closely held by the corporate security departments because they felt they were the ones responsible for properly and thoroughly vetting the candidates that would come through the gates of the largest and most prestigious aerospace firms throughout the United States. So, for 35 years, I've been checking the backgrounds of lots of people all over the United States and all 50 states on any given day for upwards of 7,000 clients, and proud to have had the opportunity to serve the client base that we have.
Wow, this is exciting, 35 years. So, Tom, before we talk more about what's keeping you up at night, we would like to hear some of your journey. Take us back to those, 35 years back. I know I've read that Aspirin was in the employment screening business when there was no background check industry. So how was it? How have the employment screening industry evolved throughout this past 35 years?
Oh, what a fantastic question. Gosh, I couldn't have set a better question up myself, Nisha. That was a very interesting time back in 1978, 79, and ultimately 1980 when I started AppScreen. I was the president and CEO of one of the largest private investigation firms in the Western United States. It was owned and managed by the former FBI agent in charge who was retired from the FBI. And we had several large aerospace clients at the time, and essentially they were relying upon us for outside or what we called external investigative help, where they might have someone that was a problematic employee that might be stealing from them or might be otherwise compromising the company. Then they would come to us and ask us to look into the backgrounds before they decided what course of action to pursue concerning the malfeasance they were committing. Well, one thing led to another, and one night at about 2 in the morning, I woke up in a cold sweat and realized, my goodness, I wonder if there's a market for doing background checks outside of the corporate security department. So we floated a few balloons, and one of the major balloons we floated was to a little company with 105 divisions at the time called Litton Industries, based in Beverly Hills, of whom my partner, the ex-FBI chief of Los Angeles, was very close friends with their chairman of the board and their president. So he said, let's get together for lunch, and he introduced me to those two gentlemen, and those two gentlemen also introduced me to the director of corporate security, who loved the idea of getting rid of this function because they had more important things to do than simply check the backgrounds of prospective employees, and they gave us a try. And lo and behold, we got launched. And after that, we were doing business probably within a year, we were doing business with 30 aerospace companies throughout the United States. And we essentially successfully convinced them that by getting rid of that function, we could save them money and we could also provide them with something that was comprehensive and thorough. From that point in time, we went into the gaming community in the state of Nevada, and from about 1982 through about 2005, you couldn't buy an employment credit report without buying it through my company, which I was very proud of that. throughout the early days, it was interesting to see basically how we would manage ourselves legally. And there were really no laws other than the original 1971 Fair Credit Reporting Act, which were governing the activities of people in the credit reporting business, of which we weren't really necessarily in the credit reporting business, even though we were providing credit reports and criminal histories and driving histories and things like that. So we kind of had to wing it. There really wasn't any legislative guideline to go by. We just had to be very ethical and very careful that we were over-protecting the consumer's privacy and making certain that if we were going to do a background check, we had the proper authority, of course, from the company to do it, and the most important thing was the proper consent from the consumers we were running the background checks on. So we sort of set a standard all the way along the way up until the 1996 post office shootings, which stimulated the need for background checks in American business. And basically, between 1996 and 1998, the industry was born. Of course, we were in it 16 years before the industry was born. And then as the industry exploded and companies popped up that were doing background checks, a lot of regulations started to ensue, mainly because the people that were going in the background check business were doing it the wrong way. They were providing units of background check service rather than a comprehensive approach to doing a thorough background check, mainly because people in the business community weren't able to fathom the actual cost of what it took to really conduct a thorough background check. So, of course, there's always opportunities available in business to undercut your competitor, and our industry saw a very tragic period of time where background checks were getting down to as low as $7, and the buying public was actually believing you could get a competent background check for as low as $7, which was ridiculous. The prevailing number at the time actually wasn't 7, it was more like 19, and the perception was that anywhere between 7 and 19 you could get good thorough work, but that just wasn't the case. Heck, we were at $75 starting back in 1980, so that gives you an idea of what it cost just to do a good basic preliminary background check, and doing a search for $7 or $19 or $39 or $49 or $59 or anything basically that we thought was less than $75 was going to give you substandard service, and that in fact came true, because what would happen was companies would rely on these $7 or $19 background checks, and they would hire people, and the background check is about as good as what you pay for. And so what would happen was searches would be conducted of microfiche records, say in a county that had inadequate record keeping, and the search would be reported as no record found, and lo and behold, the person might have been convicted of rape or arson or murder. They would come in the workplace, and wouldn't you know it, they would continue their craft, because a leopard doesn't change its spots, of course. People basically do what they're going to do or are predisposed to do, and you'd have terrible, heinous crimes being conducted in the workplace after the so-called background check was conducted. So
wow.
as the industry would continue to evolve, we would see more and more legislation that was basically as a result of companies providing cheap and inadequate background checks and the unsuspecting human resources management community believing what the salesmen were telling them, which was, oh, yes, you don't need to go spend $75 with AppScreen. You can buy a report from us for $39. It's half the price and just as good. Well, we all know you get what you pay for, and what's happened, of course, sort of leads me into the topics for today, which are one of the things that are keeping me up at night, and one of the things that is still the greatest plague and scourge of the background screening industry and really continuing to be foisted upon the human resources management community are the inadequate and inexpensive database background checks that are being sold with the belief that they are complete and thorough, and they are not.
Oh, indeed. So to help those audience or to help those HR professionals who are listening to what you talk currently, where can get be wrong when it comes to selecting a background screening company? Or what are some tips that you would want to give them in order to, go through the process in a legitimate manner?
Well, I don't want to, this is not a commercial for my company. You've asked me to come into this radio show to give you a, do you want to be, I want to give you a straight shoot. You know, we don't do any advertising. We all do our business by word of mouth, and we have tremendous clients, so we're not really looking to do it. But the most important thing that I can impart upon to your audience is to understand the most critical component of the background check process, which is the difference between relying upon Section 613 of the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which is commonly known as contemporaneous notice, versus what is required under the federal law from a reporting perspective, which is to follow Section 607 of the FCRA, which states that a consumer reporting agency must, quote, ensure maximum possible accuracy, unquote, in the screening process, but also Section 613A2 of the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which in summary states that if a consumer report containing public records is to be used where a person is could potentially be adversely affected with regard to gaining employment, the record must be, and I quote, complete and up to date, unquote. Well, what that means, and this is really important for everybody to know, that means that somebody in my position needs to do a search that not only thoroughly and properly identifies the candidate, and we're not talking simply about buying a Social Security trace, we're talking about a comprehensive identification approach. And that is so that you can identify where that person has been, so that you can go to every possible jurisdiction where there is a court that you can research the records and determine if a criminal conviction exists. Those searches are called hand searches, and they are critically important not only from the standpoint of buying a thorough background check report, but also for the reporting agency that they're buying it from to be compliant with Section 607 and 613A2. Now, let's discuss the contemporaneous notice component right now. Contemporaneous notice actually is a component of the three-component notice requirement under the FCRA, where a consumer must be first offered the opportunity to give consent for the background check. Second, if there is information in the background check report that a prospective employer identifies may be adverse to the potential employment of the candidate, that candidate be noticed, and that notice is by mail and called a pre-adverse notice. The third level of notice is called the adverse action notice. The adverse action notice is sent by the employer once the candidacy has been denied based upon information contained within the consumer report. So let's go back to notice level number two, the pre-adverse notice. That is also what is misconstrued as a substitute for a thorough search of the criminal conviction records. Now, how do you confuse notice of to a consumer about their criminal history with what's required under the Fair Credit Reporting Act? Well, generally speaking, the consensus among the companies that like to purvey inadequate or incomplete information in lieu of 607 and 613A2 is to essentially say that by virtue of sending the pre-adverse notice to the consumer, you are telling the consumer that this information, whatever it is, whether it's a murder conviction or whatever is discovered, is going to be reported to their prospective employer so that they have the opportunity to contact the prospective employer and explain themselves, saying, hey, that's not my record, or, hey, you know, I was a young kid and we were all out doing a college prank and we were hazing a guy for his fraternity and he drank too much of the lemonade and he drowned in his own vomit and golly, I didn't really mean to help kill him, but I served 20 years for that murder. I just wanted to explain it to you. Well, for some reason, the part of the employment screening industry
Well, I think for some reason we have lost the connection with Tom, and I guess he might call in again. Tom, if you're listening to the show, please call in to 347-996-5600 and hit 1, and we will be able to bring you live on air again. So to all of our audience who are listening to Drive Through HR right now, thank you so much for joining with us over here to share your lunch time with us and to learn some of the insights on employment screening industry from the expert. Tom Lawson, he's the CEO of AppScreen. Check it out on Twitter. Their Twitter handle is APSCREEN, and they are the number one leaders out there when it comes to doing employment screening. Well, in fact, if you have any questions to Tom, please shoot your question to the hashtag DTHR, and we will be able to pull that up on our Twitter stream, and we can take it forward. And if you are listening to this show, stay tuned to our social media platform so you will get updates on what's going to be the next upcoming shows on our DriveThruHR platform. We are available on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So there you go. And mostly, we were discussing what are some of the aspects that HR professionals should be knowing when it comes to hiring a pre-employment screening agency, or if it is a third party. Well, some of the questions that I had in my mind is, at what point this HR professional should think about hiring a third party when it comes to, you know, privacy, which is really, really sensitive issue, and which is cost is also involved. So when it comes to making that decision, we need to know that company is going to bring or add value by helping us find the right candidate and helping us eliminate all the frauds or any wrong candidates out there. So I am guessing Tom would be able to answer to all those questions. And if he is joining us in a bit, we will be able to continue this show. Or otherwise, I'm going to hang up and we will reschedule a show with him sometime sooner based on his schedule and based on our calendar as well. So having said that, I haven't, I don't have a calling number over here to bring him on, and I guess he is having trouble calling into the show, which I suppose, if yes, then let's see.
We lost connection.
Hey, yeah, we lost connection. But glad you are back again. Hey, Tom.
Don't know where we dropped off. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can hear you, and we are, again, live on air at this point. We were talking about some of the aspects that HR professionals should be knowing while hiring a pre-employment screening third party. So to
I don't know where we left off. Do you know where we left off? How much time did we leave off?
Yeah, we have about 10 more minutes left at this point, and I wanted to follow, I have a follow-up question on that you have said in the beginning, because, you know, we are dealing with S when we are hiring a candidate and when we are bringing a third-party agency to employment screening, we are actually dealing with privacy, which is really sensitive, and a cost is also involved, but at the same time, we cannot deny the fact that, or we cannot close our eyes saying that that candidate is going to be a right fit or a good hire, because we have to eliminate frauds, we have to eliminate any wrong hire out there. So for that, we need the help of a background screening, in fact. So what do you really recommend to those HR professionals when it comes to what it really takes to conduct a background screening by using a third party?
Well, that's a very good question. First, you have to start with very adequate and confirmed consent. There's a great debate right now concerning electronic signatures and electronic consent versus actually a live or wet signature for consent. Before you may proceed with a background check under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, Section 604, you have to have a consumer's written instructions, meaning the consumer has to give written consent. In 2001, the Electronic Signatures Act essentially provided for electronic commerce with contracts and agreements to allow people to sign a document electronically, but that didn't really translate into consent. So essentially you have a big disparity with regard to consent. And when you talk about privacy and fraud, the greatest and fastest growing crime in history is still identity theft. So it's very important to make sure that the person applying for the job is the person they say they are and that the consent is obtained. With regard to conducting a thorough background check, the first thing that needs to happen is proper and thorough identification of the candidate. Without identifying the candidate, you can't possibly know where they've been, what aliases they've used, and thus the extent of their crimes or criminal convictions. A driving history is critically important. Most people think that a driving history is not necessary unless they're going to have a driver driving a truck or driving a delivery vehicle, but that's not true. A driving history, according to the RAND Corporation in 1978, is a tremendous indicator of societal attitudes, and thus, if a person has a lousy driving history, there's a good chance they may not show up to work on time. In fact, there's a lot of studies that correlate those things. Of course, next is the criminal conviction history. A consumer reporting agency can only report information that has essentially been vetted in the public record and has resulted in a conviction. And you must go to all the jurisdictions where the person has lived and possibly worked. And you must also spread a wide net through the use of a lead-generating proprietary database system to identify where the candidate's been. Sometimes people will drive through an area and get a DUI, and they don't live there and they don't work there, but they drove through the area, they got a DUI, and most of the time a good national database will tell you where they've been. They don't tell you if it's been a conviction. You still have to go to the court to confirm that, but in essence you will be able to cast a wide net and find out where they've been. Now, the next area that's critical is referencing. People just hate referencing. They don't want to deal with it. They don't get people returning their calls. The questions aren't answered accurately. But referencing is one of the most key components to doing a background check. And I'm going to give your audience a little tip about referencing. And it's commonly in our industry known as what's known as the developed reference. That's where you are contacting a reference, and you actually ask that reference if they know one or two people that you could speak with about that candidate. That's when you really get the straight scoop about a candidate, is through the developed reference. So that's something we always recommend that a good referencer use as a tool to determine what the candidate's performance attitudes are on the job. Of course, education and employment verification are key ingredients, and today we see so many fraudulent education degrees and transcripts that it's almost mind-boggling. We do so much work with the aerospace community that you have to do education verification and you have to do a prior employment verification. You wouldn't believe what people try to purvey to their prospective employer with regard to fraudulent degrees. It's just uncanny. And you must also make sure that whatever institution has presented the degree, even if it's legitimate, if it's an accredited institution. So you must now also vet the institution that you're verifying the degree with in order to make sure the candidate didn't just get a mail order diploma. And essentially that's in a nutshell what you're looking for today in a solid background check. So
great.
If there's one other question about that, I'm ready to field it.
Yeah. Well, actually, when we talk about corporate America, we know our workforce is much more diverse, with a lot of immigrants are coming from Asia, Europe, and across the world, right? So we know if anyone has to work over here, they need to have their social security number, they need to have a work visa, and all those legal aspects. But I've seen when I throughout my observation over the past 3 years, which is pretty small, I know, but working with some of the consultancies, especially HR consultancies IT consultancies, I know they are bringing talent who doesn't even have a work experience, but then faking their work experience, but for some reason they're getting through. So do you recommend, if so, what are some of the international reference check or international screening for those talent, or especially for the immigrants?
Well, that's a great question. International screening has always been one of our fortes. Not many people really understand that every free port in the world has a different philosophy about conducting public record checks, about what constitutes public record, meaning what you can actually see and what is available to be seen. And in certain countries, for example, China, you cannot vet a candidate. It's illegal to do a background check to the extent that you'd like to do in America. In China, you can actually be thrown in jail for conducting it, and private investigators throughout Asia are thrown in jail all the time for trying to get to public officials to get information on the backgrounds of prospective high-level candidates. So the big problem with international work is the variety of available records from the standpoint of criminal background, but as well the laws surrounding the privacy of the individuals, and in some cases, as I mentioned, you can't even make inquiries into a person's background. So people can come to the United States and secure a job based upon fraudulent references that can't even be verified. It's one of the reasons you should always make sure that your background check provider has extensive mm-hmm. understanding of international background check work, because it varies, and it's also extremely expensive to do it properly. There are some places, for example, Israel, you can certainly hire a company to do background checks of criminal records in Israel for a nominal amount of money, usually a couple of $100s. But if you want to get into areas of discussing a person's background, you have to hire a high-level private investigator, and those can sometimes cost thousands of dollars just to get a simple resume verification undertaken. So very, very good question, and a continuing problem area for background checks, and especially for companies that are hiring offshore talent.
Well, we have about 2 minutes left at this point. So what could be one or two points that you wanted to share to those employers on how to protect their company from negligent hiring lawsuits?
Well, that's a great question, and I don't know how much of my part of this presentation we missed because of the technical difficulty, but the most important thing to remember is make absolutely certain that the background check provider that you hire understands the Fair Credit Reporting Act and understands how to provide you with a complete and compliant report under FCRA Section 607 and 613, and do not hire one that relies upon contemporaneous notice to give you a cheaper criminal conviction check. Make sure that the candidate is properly identified, and most importantly, that the candidate gives appropriate and proper consent, so that there's no question later on down the line when you deny that person candidacy that they gave you the right to look into their background, which ultimately got their candidacy denied.
Great. Tom, 35 years of leadership. What is the number one leadership lesson that you have learned along the way?
Keep an open mind and a smile on your face.
That's great. So, Tom, where can our audience connect with you and find out more details about AdScreen so that they can get a hold of you?
Well, we're, of course, on the web at www.appscreen.com. That's A-P-S-C-R-E-E-N. And they can email me directly at tomlawson@appscreen.com.
All right. Thanks, Tom, for joining with us and sharing your valuable insights to all of our audience. And to our audience, thank you so much for tuning in and for putting up with our technical issue. We will talk to you all tomorrow.
Thank you, Nisha.
Bye-bye.